managing Bradford City, one of the toughest jobs in the English football, I would say. I rang Simon Parker. I rang him. I said, you're going to be seeing a bit more of me. I'm coming to Bradford City to do the communications. And he laughed. I went, all right, what do you mean by that? He said, oh, I'll give you till Halloween. I said, look, they've made me an offer. This is what they've offered me. I had it in writing. And he said, the state the club's in, you probably best go. And he threw me the accounts. Have a look at them. Mate, let's have a chat tomorrow, see what you think of them. They were an absolute mess.
Let's talk about the 94th minute. Oh. When Sar skies it, right?
I was thinking about staff. These people have given everything and they're going to have to come back to the well on a Teams call Sunday morning, which we'd already pencilled, because you've got to pencil.
And when that moment happened...
When that moment happened, I was just... Julian Rhodes said to me, not there and then, he said I was just sheet white. I said, well, I don't even remember.
The Smallwood signing was tough, wasn't it? For a fan perspective, in seeing Smallwood leave the club.
It's nice when you can leave with a good bond, I think.
When it comes to our stadium, we don't own that currently, do we? Is that still a conversation that we've been looking at to actually purchase the stadium in time? Ryan Sparks, welcome to the Greatest Sunday Morning Podcast, mate.
Thanks for having us.
Excited to have you on. We spoke earlier off camera. Big Bradford City fan, so excited to have you with us. For any of our viewers who are usually with us and our listeners, as you can see, I'm alone today. There's no Dean Windass, unfortunately. He is a handicap 28, trying to get his handicap down, and don't let him tell you otherwise. But look, Dino's not left the podcast. He just can't be here today. And do you know
you
what,
heard
Ryan?
I were coming on.
Yeah. And do you know what it is, Ryan, and anyone listening? I'm fed up of carrying him. Dino knows that, so I can relieve a little bit backache today. But look, really excited, no serious, to have you on, mate. I'm excited to get into understanding who you really are. And what we do here at Greatness on Demand is our opening question is always the same. How would you define greatness? What would you say are the key characteristic traits that make somebody great?
I think, you know, you look at people who you're in sport, but in life, who've done great things, and there's many words that you'd connect with them, which relentlessness, there's this driven, but generally quite good people, I think. I think if you're good, or you try to do good, good comes back to you eventually. And sometimes when, sometimes that doesn't always work out, but in time it can. I don't know. I think greatness is defined in so many ways. People have different... You look at sports people who are dedicated to the sport, but then you look at people who are... I suppose what the question is, what is greatness, which in your life, what you're trying to achieve, isn't it? So if you... Some people just want to be a great parent, which is also an absolute skill in itself. And some people want to be a great business person, a great leader, a great sportsman, or woman. So it totally depends, I think, on what you want to be. But I think what I see is the people who succeed are the ones who never give in, are relentless, and just try to do the right thing, one foot in front of the other one. And when one goes back, just try and step one back in front. And you know, that they're the, you know, you read so many books out there of great people, and I'm reading a couple at the minute of the way people have built things and done things, and time is also important, and you need that time, and greatness comes in the end, I guess.
Nice. So look, let's take it all the way back before we get into it today of you, your current role as CEO at Bradford City and what we've achieved there, and obviously the promotion that we just recently had.
Yeah.
Where does your story begin then? So let's take it all the way back now to your earliest years. What do I need to understand, and more so those listening and watching, to understand who is Ryan? Like, what were your environment like? Take me back to those earliest days. What defined you?
I was a rubbish sportsman. That's what I was.
What sport were you playing?
Everything. I tried everything. I was pretty hopeless at cricket, football, rugby, scared of motorsports. But I liked them all. Yeah. I was just rubbish at them all. And like a lot of people, I dreamt that I could play professional rugby league, would have been my initial goal. Played some football. I definitely wasn't doing well at that either. And you know, my brother and a lot of my friends were very good at both sports. And I think after a while, I got into my mid-teens. I remember playing football till about 12 or 13. I got most improved player a couple of years back to back. That's a clear message for anyone, isn't it? You know, and I took that one on the chin and realised that I'm maybe the other side of the fence, played rugby league for a little while, played for some really tough clubs in Bradford and Leeds. Far too tough for me, if I'm honest. Some of those guys have gone on and played professionally, some of them in this city and where we are now. And yeah, I have a lot of respect for them because I know how hard it is and I respect how they've achieved their greatness. And you learn a lot from them. And I think in my mid-teens, I just didn't have that desire to do what a sportsman needed to do. You know, gym, nutrition, dedication. I didn't have it because it wasn't my thing. I didn't realise it wasn't my calling. So that's what was preventing me. I can remember driving out of school or walking out of school on a night and the boys were training and I didn't turn up or I didn't want to do it. And that's because I didn't really fancy it. It's just obviously clearly there. And it came to me that I wanted to have a career in sport. You know, I was inspired by sport from a young age. I watched professional rugby league, professional football, professional speedway in Bradford, and all three teams were in absolute pinnacle mode in the late 90s. Mm. And I saw trophy after trophy after trophy, crowds after crowds. So to me, that was just part of the fabric of my DNA, really, if you like, was all around sport. I live to watch sport, and I live to think about it and commentate on it and analyse it. And I didn't know how I would find my way into that. And I can remember being, I don't know, 17, 18 years old, some sleepy pre-season friendly at what is now the John Smiths between Huddersfield Giants and the Bulls. And the press box was to my side, and I thought, oh yeah, That maybe that's a way I could analyse, commentate, and get paid to do it. And I set about that and went to university to study it. And through university is probably when the first time I realised I had to compete in my life to do anything. We're in a room full of about 40 people, and we went around the room and everybody said what their dream job was. And I realised that it was going to be fierce in terms of who's, you know, the likelihood of all of us getting work in the industry was very slim, but maybe it would boil down to 10%. Mm. How could I get into the 10%? Mm. And I ebbed and flowed initially at university. It was similar to my school life, not committed, could have done better, if I'm honest. And I think I just wanted to stop being that guy. You know, and just be someone who might actually do something with their life. And that's when I started to get work experience. I started to do silly hours outside of a part-time job and outside of a university course. But it got me where into the doors of journalism. And then I stepped out of journalism and went to work in club sport media at Oddsall, which was obviously my club, my hometown club, and that was tough because I saw things I wasn't expecting to see. Mm. The sort of fairy tale ends when you're in the back office. But wow, I learned a lot, and from that point, I was frustrated by the leadership of that club.
And I guess does that come from you being frustrated is because of your passion for the local team, obviously?
Yeah, probably. I think it wasn't that I knew, I felt like I knew better or anything like that.
Being Bradford Bulls, obviously.
Yeah, initially. Absolutely not. No, I didn't know better. I had no idea. I just questioned some of that. In my mind, you know, that analytical part, probably the journalism side of it bleeding in there, I questioned some of the things that were happening and the direction of a club, and I ultimately resigned from that job. Which is the only job I've ever resigned from because I no longer felt I could stay there.
And how old were you at this time, Ryan? 20?
I would have been in my early 20s, 2013, so what, 21, 22, something like that. So young and probably a bit naive, but I just knew I had to come out of that environment. In a strange decision, I then set up an amateur rugby league club in a town in Murfield and I wanted to prove that I could potentially do something like that. And we ran it for a few years, and in our first season we won silverware, second season we won silverware. It taught me a lot actually about sustaining that, because that's the hardest part. Mm. It's very easy to do it once. It's when you sustain it. We had great things like Robbie Paul was playing for us, Francis Maloney. People thought we were paying them, we weren't. We just hooked this huge marketing machine behind it. And I suppose that was me trying to prove that I felt like I could do that. But yeah, it was... That was my journey into sport, really. But like with anything in life, I then thought, well, I need to realign my focus. I went back into journalism. I wanted to come away from that really quickly. I realised I shouldn't have done that. And I remember being in Austria on holiday with my wife, and Featherston Rovers were looking for a communications manager, and I don't know what. I just said to my wife, I said, I'm going to call David Longo tomorrow, and I'm going to ask him if I can go and meet him and try my best to get a job. And she said, are you sure? It's obviously Championship Rugby League, and are you sure you're going to be happy doing that? I said, 100%. I know I can make a difference there, and it's a club that I admire in so many ways. And at the time, I'd had a conversation with a Super League club as well, and there's something about it. I just went over to meet Dav. We hit it off straight away, and I took the job at Featherston. And I, at that very moment, promised myself that this would be what I wanted to do. I'd made my mind up that I wanted to be in club sport, club media, club operations, basically. And I was really, really lucky that I joined a club that was progressive, with great leadership in Dav, who with aligned thinking and would give me a platform then to learn, because we had so few staff.
Yeah,
I was able to get involved in all sorts of things, commercially, retail, the running of the team, the recruitment of the players, sporting excellence, elite sport. And I'd thought, wow. And we did well on the pitch. We improved the club, and the club went from being financially out of control to profitable. And on the pitch, we were developing into a Super League team, which I believe we would have become.
So even at that stage, before you go on to work at Bradford City,
it's two
high-pressure jobs in a way, because you're taking a lot of ownership.
Yeah.
Where did your drive, determination, ambition come from? Is it your parents? Is it someone else who's giving you that? Do you know what? Brush yourself off. Go again in wanting to actually make a name for yourself. Because, I mean, respectively, we spoke downstairs, and we'll get into it in a moment, at Bradford. And, you know, my thoughts on you, and I think you've done a great job at Bradford. And obviously everyone has their own opinions. But looking at you now and speaking to you, and I did kind of get this feeling before we even started speaking, is you've got a... There must be a why behind the reasons what you do these things. I can see you've got drive and ambition, but... What's your real reason, Ryan, for like getting up and actually, you know, push yourself up and going again?
I don't really know. Probably, do you know what? It's a question no one's ever asked me, and it's a question I've never asked myself. I don't tend to do a lot of, you know, staring in the mirror stuff. So I think the probably through failure, you know, as a kid growing up, I just felt like I'd achieved nothing, and I was just bumbling through life and really not giving a good account of myself, and to the point where people say, do you have regrets and things? Yeah, I do. I'd go back to school and do it all again and do it better.
Would you?
Yeah, would you?
You see, I wouldn't. Yeah, I got three GCSEs at school.
Yeah, I've done all right. Do you know what? Now, I don't mean education-wise.
Okay.
That wasn't too bad. You know, again, pretty average. Couple of A's, couple of B's, couple of C's, that kind of thing. That's the kind of guy I was. Under pressure from my mum wanting me to do well, I was under pressure, you know what I mean? But equally... Just give a better account of myself as a person. You know, like try harder, be fairer with teachers, and try harder in sport when they're giving you an opportunity, that kind of stuff. But just do better. So I'd probably go back and change that. But then all roads lead you to here. And I guess, yeah, so that, never about making a name for myself. And I can assure you that's not, there's two sides of that coin. It's nice when people... are nice to you, but it's not when it's not. So I'm not sure that it was ever about making a name for yourself. It was just to do good for you, to do good and think that you've made a difference would be probably a driver. And that driver, yeah, like I say, it's probably fueled from all those days on sports pitches thinking, I'm just not quite good enough. Why? And the truth is, it's because you can't be, you know, someone else can't give you inspiration, really. I think you've got to do that for yourself. It's only in my view. I'm not sure I have anyone around me where I thought I'm going to do it because they told me to do it. Don't get me wrong, there's people in your life, your parents, your grandparents, your family, your wife, your friends, who all influence you daily. And I listen to people and try and take something from every conversation I have. I think that's very important. And but equally, you've got to make your own mind up, and the only thing you can control is what you do.
Couldn't agree more, mate. I think I've said it a lot on this podcast, so people probably get fed up of hearing me saying it, but I say it to my business clients, I say, look, the reality is I can give you all the resources, all the tools, I can guide you and allow you to take certain actions to increase your bottom margins, whatever it may be, but the reality is, business, life, whatever, it's all on you. Win lose, it's all on you. And it doesn't matter if you've got a team around you. The reality is that you've got to take ownership for that and understand what your next steps are going to be. And I get a lot from that for you. So your breakthrough began, obviously, coming through to rugby. I want to go back to Featherstone Rovers then. So what's that transition now to Bradford City? What was that defining moment that changed everything for you to go on to Bradford?
I just knew, you know, in any job, you have to be honest about what, do you think there's anything more you can do? I'd made no secret of the fact to David at the time, we were really good, really close. We still are. David now works with me at Bradford. I was honest. I said I had a desire to run a club by 30. That is a dream of mine. I'm frankly inspired by what you've done in your career, multiple CEO roles, GM roles, and he's done a pretty much an exceptional job. Everything he's touched, in my opinion. And I thought that the calling became clearer, because I was so close to the coalface, one at Bradford City, at Bradford Bulls, because we were in administration and there was four members of staff left, so you naturally 0.5 jobs, 1.5 jobs, you're just doing more and more and more. And then at Featherstone, there were times where the way Dav ran the club taught me a lot. He made you feel like everyone was the boss. You know, everybody was leading.
Yeah, good.
And that's pretty, when you've got that, you just get this real energy about you that no one can take away. And I thought it would be great to work in football. That would be a great destination. Not someone that chases things like that. I think you can force it and it can go the other way. And would you believe the conversation was born out of Edin Rahic, the former owner, chief exec, having a conversation with Gareth Jones at Radio Leeds. And this is why I always think relationships really important, and trust and bonds. And I think Edin had spoken to Gareth about PR at Bradford City. Maybe that he felt PR was the problem. It was far deeper than some PR, which I found out when I opened the door for the first time.
Yeah.
And he asked who could potentially help with that. And Gareth said, I think Ryan at Featherstone could help you. He met me, and it went on for a long time, maybe 3 to 6 months, where there was silence. And I understand that now, because there was distraction. And then at some point in that summer, they offered me the job to do communications, and that's how I ended up at Bradford City.
And what year were this?
2018.
2018.
So the start of the 2018-19 season, which led to obviously relegation back to League Two.
Yeah.
Good start.
So yeah, and look, like I said to you, fair play in coming into a role in that, especially a big club like Bradford, and being head of communications.
I was very excited about it.
Yeah, I'm going to say what's going on in your head at the time.
Oh, I was delighted.
Yeah.
I was absolutely bouncing off the walls, and people at Featherstone were happy for me as well, if that makes sense. Yeah. Good club, good people, and they knew that it was a great opportunity. I had never worked in football. I'd never been any closer than... The closest I got to working in football was miles away, in the sense that I would sit at Oddsall in 2012, 13, 14... and look at all the wonderful things that were happening at Valley Parade, and looking at public comment from the likes of Julian Rhodes, Mark Lawn, James Mason, David Baldwin, thinking, oof, wow, what a machine. I wish we had them kind of leaders here, you know, if I'm honest. I'll never forget an article where Julian Rhodes said that they'd take the Bulls if they could make it break even. And we were on the prayer mats at Oddsall thinking, please help us, you know, because we just thought Bradford City was, what an act to follow, the way they built a club and had its troubles, but rebuilt and done really, really well on and off the pitch from what it seemed. And so, yeah, I probably thought I was walking into that, if I'm honest. And I wasn't. I was walking into something different. But I was really excited. Simon Parker, we laugh about it now, rang me. I rang Simon Parker, obviously.
TNA Simon Parker.
Yeah, he'd obviously done bits with the Bulls.
Yeah.
I rang him. I said, you're going to be seeing a bit more of me. I'm coming to Bradford City to do the communications. And he laughed. And he said, ooh. He obviously realised what I was. He knew more than I did.
It's the first thing you want to hear.
I went, all right, what do you mean by that? He said, oh, I'll give you till Halloween. And I went, well, I'll be fine. And to be fair, I understood his point when I got, you know, it was tough, like, obviously, at the start. And Halloween seemed a long way away when I started on July the 14th or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And he said this thing to me, and I've never forgotten it. He said, it's a bit like what you do now. Mm. It's just the magnifying glass is about 50 times bigger. Mm. And you'll be scrutinised everything you do. But he said, if you get it right, it'd be fantastic. Mm. And he said, I just don't know how much influence you'll be able to have, blah, blah, blah. So that was my start point, and then I joined the club. Yeah,
and I think that's a key moment in your life and everyone's life, in when they're hearing different opinions or conversations are going on from others, and I think you've then got to be able to make a decision of what your thought process is. So, when you've then gone into it, and let's say things have now come to the light, and you mentioned earlier, like you're like, wow, there's a lot of different things going on here, right? It's pressure. At that early stage, before CEO, what's the vision for you and your impact in the club? What are you thinking, personal goal-wise, to think what you want to make a difference in the club?
First of all, it was never about being CEO of Bradford. It was about the communications of the club were a little bit... I mean, you're a fan, so you tell me if I'm wrong. It seemed a bit tin pot to me. Yeah. I thought our output at Featherstone Rovers was far superior. After a week at the club, I thought the club was superior as well. But that's another story. I wanted to bring standards to Bradford City from a comms perspective. And if you look at the way the club markets itself and it digitised itself, we didn't have cameras and things like that, you know, and the resources were so, not a fair reflection of the staff at all. You know, we had a club secretary doing a media manager role, trying to film post-match interviews, put the team sheets in. Wonderful on a balance sheet, but you're not growing anything. It looks nice. You're really low levels, you know, your wage bill's a little lower, but you're not getting, the business isn't getting any bigger. So first of all, it was about that. But obviously there was different ideas at the club and different challenges. So you've got to earn the respect of the people in the room. That was tough because you're the guy from rugby that, and the club was in a bad place. And I think it was just another distraction. And then there were so many things happened, you know, issues around players. And I got involved. I got left to deal with things, which I couldn't believe they'd let me deal with. But I just cracked on with it. You know, that was the way I've always, you know, rugby league as a sport is something that gets often criticised by people, but it creates really good operators, in my opinion, because everybody that works in that game knows how hard it is to pull a crowd, keep a crowd, build a business, and they're dying for it. You know, I was listening to Ken Davey, the Huddersfield Giants owner, yesterday, talking about how tough it is for Huddersfield Giants at the moment. And you know, I felt that. And in football, we're blessed with, we can pull a crowd when we build a team and things like that. And it's really tough in rugby league. So you do respect what you have really a lot, and then when you're starting to lose it, it concerns you. And I think some great people have come into football from rugby, and rugby league has lost some good people through that. But that's, we're going off on a side subject. I think. So my initial aim. And the aim for me was to make Bradford City's output from a comms and marketing perspective, which would then develop commercial growth and fan engagement, etc., and growth across the board, far, far better than it was, which was basically just wasn't very good, if I'm being honest. That's why I was brought in.
And then when you came to, so I want to get into the transition now in the CEO role. Mm. What does that transition look like? So what do you believe yourself, in your opinion, Med, and we spoke downstairs, or Julian, to pick up that phone and say...
Well, that's quite a long story. It was 2018. The previous CEO left the club. We all, it's well documented. And Julian Rhodes arrived at the club. And Julian knows this is my thoughts, so I'm speaking honestly. I was very, very concerned about, I was like, why would the former, you know, I'm looking at it in black and white. Mm. Why would the former owner of the club be back in the building? Is he buying the club? What's going on? Mm. And I probably hadn't, it probably unearthed some memories from my Bradford Bulls past of vulnerable leadership and not knowing where we're going, and I knew what the end result was. It was potentially administration at the Bulls, it was twice.
Yeah.
And I was really worried about what that meant. And not because, I'm not judging Julian, because ironically, I'd always wanted to work with his team.
You said it before.
Back in the day. But I was just like, what is going on? Mm. You know, it really unnerved me and unsettled me. And at that time, I'd had a conversation with David about going back to Featherstone, because I was just completely, I just found it really tough, the environment. I just didn't realise. But then I had a word myself about that, and I spoke to my wife, and she said, you're not going to do that. I said, no, I'm having a conversation with myself about, you know, you get presented in life with an easier option, don't you? Mm-hmm. And I said, no, we've got to do the harder option. And so eventually I had a conversation with Julian, and our first... The first thing was, he thought, I've got to try and remember, something like, what do you want to do here? What's your plan? And I said, well, I'd like some more responsibility. I think I can help more. And then he said to me, he tested me out. I was made an offer by a Super League club to go in a general manager role, which would have been significantly more money and things like that, and better for my family. And
less pressure, easier maybe.
But I don't know if it'd be easier. Certainly different, more in line with where I wanted to go.
Less eyeballs.
Yeah. So I had all them things to consider, and he sat me down, and I said, look, they've made me an offer. This is what they've offered me. I had it in writing. And he said, well, the state the club's in, you probably best go. And it was a bit of a test, I think. And I wasn't sure what that was going to be. And I just said, no, I want to stay. The couple of days later, I thought, no, I'm going to stay. I quite like this guy.
What made you think about staying then? What's that?
Because you can't walk away from something when you've just... I'd only just started. I'd only been there four or 5 months.
Yeah.
You know, how can you quit? How can you walk? I've never done anything like that before, where I've gone in somewhere and just got a little bit uncomfortable and thought, I'll just run away from it.
And I think before we go further, this is why I'm glad you're here, Ryan, because I think people don't get to see this side of you. What I get in this short conversation before we go further on is you're very passionate, and I think you're committed to a role.
Yeah,
so if someone's giving you an opportunity, you're a winner, basically, is what I'm trying to say to you.
You don't want to walk away
from something that, you know what I mean? And I'm the same. I would not take a client on our business role and they've got, you know, long goals in the next 6 to 12 months and further, and we plan this roadmap, and then we come to a roadblock at some point and go, oh, do you know what, it's best that you actually move on and probably someone else can help you.
Yeah.
We're going to understand, right, how can we navigate and get out of our comfort zone to allow the big picture plan I've got to, you know, come to fruition?
Well, that were it, get out of the comfort zone. Yeah. That was probably it. And,
but how do you do that? And this is a good, for people listening, our viewers, and anyone, how do you get out of the comfort zone?
Just crack, choices.
Because it's not a choice. Nice feeling, right?
No, not at all. It's not been comfortable for most of my life, really, work-wise. But I've always, I don't know, something about that I enjoy about that battle. But I don't know what it is. Just keep getting up.
I get it. It's crazy.
So I'm just going back to what we're talking about. And I just thought, I kind of like this guy. He's all right. Like, he obviously knows exactly what he's doing. And I took a moment and thought, rather than running away to do something easier, why don't you sit and learn from someone who you admired 10 years ago and thought, wow, wish he were our owner or chief exec, that'd be great.
Yeah.
So I set about that, and I said, I'd like to get more involved. And he threw me the accounts on the table and said, have a look at them, mate, let's have a chat tomorrow, see what you think of them. They were an absolute mess, to say the least. And I picked out some things, and he then realised that I had an interest in it. And I'll be honest with you, the account stuff was not something I really enjoyed. Now I love it, but then I just didn't like looking at it. But, you know, now it's my absolute Bible. I love the accounts. I love pushing the budget. I love to see people beating lines in the budgets and making positive difference. And that's the way we run the club, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But that was the moment, really. And that was 2020, where are we now? 2018,
yep.
Going into 2019. He wanted, Julian's not someone who speaks publicly, always keeps his counsel. When he speaks, people have listened, I think, and very, very probably learnt from that in his own past. And I think you can admire why. And he said to me, I need you to be the club spokesperson, and we're going to change your job title to communications director. But I want you to do all the fans forums. I want you to build a try and build some kind of relationship with the fans. And that were tricky because people would say, well, where's the owner? Where's the CEO? Why aren't they talking? And Julian was interim chief exec. But I probably didn't realise they were probably putting me through the paces, if I'm honest. And then commercially, I felt we needed to be better. I'd start to really review things. And he said, well, can you do that as well? So then you join, you've got a comms director and commercial director role. Then you start to backfill your old job. So that's a bit scary because you're really proud of what you're doing. That was the only thing I've ever really been proud of. I really liked what we did. And I thought, oh, I'm going to hand this to someone else. I've never done that before. Never, ever have I handed my old job back to someone. And luckily, I had geniuses who came in who were far better than me and made us even better than what I could ever imagine at that. So then it released me to do more things. I started to talk to commercial partners. I enjoyed that. Started to sign players. I was then given that responsibility.
What's that responsibility like then for you to sign players? Because obviously that's a big
I don't mean go and watch them. I mean physically negotiate
the
contract.
But are you in a? Would you be in
which
a position?
Which I love to do. Yeah.
I mean, we could get into it later down the line. Would you be in a position where you'd still potentially have conversations of potential players to bring in? Obviously,
oh,
we
of
know.
Course. Yeah, 100%. Oh yeah. Wow, yeah, yeah. I mean, you're involved in that all the time. But right then, that was the first.
Literally just signing pen to paper. You're doing.
And I remember the first conversation. It was a player we were taking on loan, and obviously, This is where the gap was. I didn't know what the budget was, obviously, because I wasn't CEO. Julian had said, I want you to negotiate this deal and close it.
And you're blindfolded.
And I said, but how much can I offer him? I can make this really easy for myself and offer him 50 grand a week. But So he just said, do what you think you need to do. So that was there were just tests along the way. And then Julian had intimated to the owner that he wanted to step down. It was very much a short-term thing to rebalance the club, which he'd done. Financially, it gave me a great start point, and for various reasons off the pitch, talks of potential things happening, it was delayed from the summer through to about November 2020, and then we kind of hit rock bottom. I remember we went to Leyton Orient. I can see it now. Rhys Staunton had just come back from injury, I think. Then tore his hamstring again in the game. He'd done really well. And then someone from Leyton Orient, I can remember who, just whopped one in the top corner from a free kick. We lost the game 1-0 in the middle of COVID. Was it COVID? Yes.
It would have been, yeah.
And we're very quiet in the ground, so yeah. But you always have fans at Leyton Orient because they're in the apartments watching, so it didn't feel completely empty. And that, yeah, and we were second bottom that night in the league, and that was, in my view, rock bottom.
What's going on in your head at the time then during that period?
I just really frustrated because I'd wanted to be involved that summer, so then I was nowhere near any decisions around the team or the budget or where we were going, and I was a bit worried, genuinely concerned that we were on our way out of the division. I didn't see any way past it because we just didn't know how to win anymore, you know, and it's taken us years to work that back out. And I got a call that night from Julian on the way home, and he said, what do you think we need to do? And I said, well, at some point we have to decide who's running the club here, because at the minute I'm kind of running it behind a curtain, if you like, and having to front it up, but I'm not making any real decisions, and decisions are potentially being made for me, and it's tough, and ultimately, more worryingly, we're losing all the time.
And you've probably got an idea of a team you want to build around that as well.
Oh, yeah. We need management, we need structure, and we need some direction. But also, that then will help the pitch, because we'll have more money to spend on players and we'll be able to put staff around the management. And it just felt a little bit lost, if I'm honest. It was a bit sad. And the next day, it was decided I would take over. So you're taking over from a really low point, but then I found that, you know, you can imagine, I was excited about taking over. I thought, wow, this is what I've wanted. But then you're met by quite a lot of criticism.
The reality of what happens.
Yeah, that was tough.
And what's tough about it? So obviously you were the youngest, well, I think you're the youngest CEO in
I was, yeah, I don't know
at the time. I couldn't even imagine it, excuse me, at that age of taking all that pressure on a big club like Bradford. So you're excited because you've taken the role, because it's what you always wanted, and then reality hits, and you're being scrutinised. You can imagine, you know, people going, well, why is the right man, and X, Y, and Z, and you're going to get opinions.
The questions that I would have asked myself.
Yeah.
So I'm all right with
it. Yeah, yeah. and you're the man to actually take all that fire. How do you deal with the fire at the time?
There's no way to deal. How would you know? I don't know. I didn't have a coping mechanism with it because I was just like, never felt like that before. Because I'd never been, no one really knew who you were. You're just in the background. Don't get me wrong. Because you were doing the spokesperson part of the job, people knew that you were talking on behalf of the club, but they knew that at the end of the day, I was only able to potentially feed a message that wasn't necessarily my opinion, was the club's view. So I was, people were aware of me, but not where the responsibility sat. So yeah, it's not easy. And the, you know, I remember going on that night, and my wife were like, "Wow," she said, "I didn't see that coming." I said, "Yeah, I kind of did," and I said, but to be fair, it wasn't unilateral. I wasn't popular. It wasn't a popular choice at all. But there was quite a lot of people in the middle of all that who said, "Oh, good luck. You know, Bradford guy, rather have someone from my own city running it. If you need any help, let me know." Like, I got quite a lot of that, to be fair. You just don't feel them at the time because you're overwhelmed. And to be honest, like I said, a lot of the questions that were asked, I'd ask myself if it was my club or if I was watching another club. It's just, if it gets personal, and some of it was, and there was things like, I won't even say what was said, but it was basically, it'd be better if he wasn't on the planet, was a couple of them. Diseases given to him to get him off the planet.
I mean, Dean told me, I saw him through, he's like, we're all human, mate. And I think people need to realise that you're human, for one, and then themselves, in passing a silly comment, in understanding that as much as we're passionate about football, and as much as you know and everyone knows, people watching this, are passionate about Bradford City, it is a sport and it's a hobby and it's something that we love and we're interested in. And people will kill me for that, so watching it, I get it. But the reality is, it doesn't matter who does that role, Ryan, whether it was me, whether it was someone else. You're going to get so much of that opinion. And I think respect to you is you've got enough thick skin, and obviously we're getting to where we are now when it's taken that time to get to this point in the promotion. But all fair and respect to you for sticking it out, because when you think about City's pride and the history, there's a lot of fucking shit riding on your shoulders.
But I knew that as well. I found that out as it went along. So to be honest with you, that I wasn't actually that bothered by it. I very quickly got over it because, let's be honest, we were in the shit massively, right, on the pitch. So there was no time to start talking about, how woe is me, someone thinks it's I'm rubbish, you know.
Find a solution, but
yeah,
crack
everyone,
on.
I knew that. You know, people were in the business, not many people were surprised that I was taking over, if that makes sense. In fact, most people welcomed it. And then a few people will probably thought, wow, that will seal his fate at the club, because ultimately he will leave at some point. But I understood it, and we had a good relationship, so we got on at the club, everyone got on. But we had to focus on what was important, which was, I think we had, 5-6 months to get Bradford safe? Crazy words to say, but that was the reality. And it had been the reality at Bradford in the past as well, in the later 2000s. So it's not new, but it was painful for people. So I just set about that, and where were we weak? Everywhere, you know. We had no recruitment strategy, we had no people to help with recruitment. So we had to go ground zero. We had Lee Turnbull came in, fantastic help to me. We got our scouts, our analysts acting as our scouts because we were in COVID, so we couldn't really watch games. We were watching a bit, and we just started to recruit players that were going to help the players that we had with lots of injuries, lots of young players. Obviously, Mark Truman took over and did really, really well. Too well all at once. unbelievable moments in a tough season. And I said that to him at the end of, on May the 3rd, I said, you know, people have forgotten, but I haven't. And you started this, you know, because I meant that. I do, you know, he was that man, and his colleagues, they were the turning point in 2020. Believe me, it seems a long time ago, but someone has to put the anchor down at a club.
Trigger.
Someone has to stop losing. And he stopped us losing in that sense. We didn't suffer like that again. So, yeah, from there, obviously, it was just, and I remember Julian saying to me on his sort of way out of that role, he said, "You've got quite a bit to sort out." I said, "Yeah, thanks for that, but whatever." But what he meant was he knew that there were things needed to be done, and he wanted someone with some energy and a fresh set of eyes to put them in. Because he'd done his vision at Bradford. He sold the club. So I think it was good that he came back and helped. He had a massive... He also played a part in the fact that we've got promoted. Let's not forget that, because I know what he took over. It would have been easier to just stay at home for him and look after his family and do what he wants to do. And everybody's, there's a lot of people that played a part in that, you know. So that was how I ended up in this, basically. It's a very long, boring story. Sorry about
I love the story. People
bit
don't
of
see
chance,
it.
Bit of right time, right place. But also you've got to take the chance and be willing. And I was always willing. It was just, you know, a lot of strain on my home life. I didn't really...
Yeah, mentally. Learn when you mentally, when, yeah, I'm going to say that. So I want to talk about that, because I think that's important too, because you're human, mate. And I think, like, it's when the camera's on and there's just, you know, this is why we do this pod, is to strip all the bullshit away and just understand we're all human.
Yeah,
you know, we have our thoughts, feelings, emotions, but as men especially, we hide them away. And think, well, I have this position and this title, so I can't. But that's bullshit.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right. So when you are going home, and I'd be the same. My anxiety would be through the roof. As much as I'm confident as I am, and anyone who knows me, go getter. The reality is, I'm human.
Anxiety is not. Anxiety is a fear. It's a dial up of the word fear for me. So you just have to admit that you're scared. Of course you are. Why wouldn't you be?
Yeah.
So if you weren't scared, that means you're probably not bothered.
You're not human.
So if you're not bothered, then how are you going to help? You know. So of course you're scared. You know. I mean, that's natural. You know. I mean, but then you have to think about, well, there's people that are going through far worse than being a bit scared about doing a
job.
Exactly. Right.
That's what I say. Yeah.
So that really for me is how you cope. And don't get me wrong, I think there were times where. I remember Dave Baldwin saying to me when I took the job, he said, I'm not sure social media would be great for you because there'll be a lot of opinions and things. I didn't listen to him. You know what I mean? I didn't listen. I thought, oh, yeah, it'd be great for fan engagement, blah, blah, blah. and I'm trying to do it my way. And that would, again, you got to reflect on your decisions. And that was a bad decision. I should have said, yeah, you're right, Dave, I'll take your advice. And I didn't. And he said that for the right reasons. And not because he didn't want me to talk to fans, it's because he wanted me to, you know, have clear focus, right? And I can remember coming out of one game at Crawley when Derek Adams was our manager, and I was trying to think of my own opinion in the car. And usually when we drive back from games or whatever, I'd say, oh, you drive, you know, I'll just sit and think. And I said, no, I'll drive back. And I was driving back trying to think of what I felt and thought. And in my mind, I could hear, like, you know, I'd open my phone and social media was crazy because we'd lost at Crawley. And I was listening. I could almost hear it in my head. You know, you're almost listening and thinking, oh, my God. Well, I can't even hear my own opinion anymore. So I knew I had to reduce the amount of... It's not sustainable, in my opinion, to do that. And it was better to take myself away from social media. I don't have Facebook or X or whatever it's called now. And I try to keep it quite my private social media private and just have my life with it. So I don't really do a lot on there. That was helpful. That was like healing. You know, I felt like I had a lot of pressure off my shoulders.
Yeah, turn it off.
I think once that was done in my mind, I felt like I just could breathe again.
Rebirth
and just
again.
Make my own decisions then. So actually that was quite liberating. And it wasn't, obviously it's not a popular thing to do, is it? But I've been in yourself, you're talking about how you deal with it and anxiety and fear. You can limit the anxiety if you're not looking for it.
Yeah.
You know, if you go...
Take yourself away
from
the situation.
If you want to find someone who said something bad about you, you can find it really easily.
Easy.
So why would you go looking for it? You know it's there. You accept the criticism and you accept praise and criticism. And if you want praise, you've got to have criticism. If you don't want either, like I don't want it, I'm not bothered. I'm just quite happy to get on with it.
Yeah.
As long as I've got my health and I'm cracking on with my life and we're doing well in as best we can, that's good enough for me. And that's the lesson I would, if I ever give anyone advice, it would be to try and keep a clear mind. And it's very hard if you're inviting lots of opinions, and it's not always healthy.
Mm.
You've got to be able to make a decision.
Mm.
And then I think that period is when I probably did my most listening. I started to listen to people who've been through things.
Mm.
And I was like, yep, you're right, yep. And, you know, you join all the dots and then you get better.
Yeah, I love that, because I think your environment shapes you.
Mm.
And you're absolutely right, is you've got to understand of, you said it there and I've said it before, if you're looking for trouble, you'll find trouble, right? Mm. If you're looking for the opposite, good, health, well-being, drive, determination, you'll find it. But it's the same saying as if you put yourself in a room of 10 negative, bitchy, moaning individuals, become the 11th, put yourself on the opposite of what you're reading, of what the information you take and absorb and those who are around you. Again, it becomes this melting pot of just ultimately, hopefully on paper, whatever the word success means, it becomes that outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So what don't fans see behind the scenes? I love asking this, like I ask it to a lot of footballers and I ask it to a lot of people who are in a position similar to yourself, is what don't people see behind the scenes in regards to running such a big club like Bradford City? Like, what sacrifice do you have to make on a weekly or monthly, or what don't they see?
It's actually a very small club behind the scenes. That's what people probably don't see. Most people who interact with our football club can't believe how we operate so lean. But actually, we've got more staff now than we've ever had. You could count the staff who were running Bradford City in 2018, just over one hand, maybe two
wow.
hands. And I recognised that very early. Because that demoralises people.
Yeah.
You know, when they are absolutely grafting, but they're doing so many things, no one's really being able to focus. So I just to be clear on that, it wasn't a case of let's change the staff. Most of the staff are still there. Some people have left off their own choice.
Mm.
Some people have got different jobs, better jobs, different industries, whatever they want. And some people we've shook hands and said we need to change, right?
Yeah.
That's just natural.
Yeah.
But the majority, what we really did was we've got 100% sole ownership. So we're an oil tanker on the grass. We're an oil tanker from the outside looking in. But we're actually a speedboat, really, inside the four walls, which makes you very, very good at making decisions, good and bad, quickly. So we built a senior management team, which is packed full of people that can all run clubs, in my opinion, right?
Mm.
And you might say, why on earth would you do that? Because I don't have the insecurity about it. So for me, I'm not a fan of too many cooks can spoil the broth and you can't have too many leaders. Completely disagree with that.
Mm.
I couldn't disagree with that any more strongly. There is nothing wrong. Don't get at times we have to all chill out a little bit, no doubt. But there is nothing wrong with a room full of people that think they are running the show.
Totally agree.
Because you get passion, you get energy, you get ownership, and if we all listen to each other, which we're quite good at, and we have some really funny debates and healthy debates, and I sat there when we had our season ticket meeting this summer, in Christmas time. We were doing better-ish on the pitch towards the end of Christmas, so things were a little bit more joyful around the place. And I compared it to the first season ticket meeting I was a part of in 2018-19, maybe 19.
Mm.
And I had people stood up shouting, we've got to do this, we've got to do this, I want to do this, I want us to do this. And I just sat back and chuckled to myself, thought, you know what, this is the end result of when you've got people who
players.
Are like, game on, you know. And it's and then for them people, we've done well on the pitch. Season ticket price increase was well received because it was justified and honest. I think we were really transparent about it. We're still very cheap and affordable. And we've sold nearly 16,000, which is a reward for all them people that stood in that room with such passion.
Mm.
So going back to your original question, we are a small machine and we work very closely and we have a culture that is very simple. No dickheads, basically.
Good.
Basically. And we have people who are culturally trying their best to... They'll give you everything, you know?
Mm.
And we look after them. Mm. We are very relaxed about how our staff, if they need a break, have a break. Need a holiday, have a holiday. Need to spend time with your family. Do something medically, whatever you need to do, do it.
Love that.
Because... when you build that And as long as people respect that, which they do, you know, when you build that, when it's game on, and we all need to work really hard and maybe do a crazy week, 100 Step hours, and we've had them
yep.
weeks.
Yep.
Everyone goes, yeah, ready to go.
Yep.
Because they know that they're going to be looked after. We try to give our staff the tools. So, for example, it would be absolutely pointless giving Graham Alexander the Bradford manager's job and not giving him a budget to try and win matches with. We have the same belief off the pitch. It has equal growth for the club, 40-50% increase in our turnover since we started. And what I love about this football club is the people within it who are behind the scenes are top. Like, as a fan, you don't realise how fortunate you are. Mm. I'm very fortunate to have them. And I think they are the golden era of the club's backroom staff. They're fantastic. It's a pleasure to work with them. We live by, let's have the answer before we have to ask the question. Mm. Once that penny drops, the way people are is fantastic. Some people go through some tough times. We look after them. And we're kind of mucking. It's a little bit old school like that. But do you know, that probably comes through my past and what made me feel the most. When did I feel at my most energetic was when I was left to do my job. I wasn't micromanaged and I was believed in and backed and allowed to fail and allowed to trip up and make mistakes, but then allowed to succeed off the back of it. So that's where we are. And I think that's the bit that you can't always present that publicly because not everybody wants that. People just like to do their job, but good people is very, very important.
What I love about you, Ryan, is I think people have a misconception of who you are. That's why I'm glad you're here, of having an ego. It's all about Ryan. Mate, it couldn't be fucking further from the truth in meeting you, knowing you, because the best thing you've done here and what you've said and what I do in my business is you're right. Drop your fucking ego and admit, if you are not good at something, get someone else better to do that role for you. So people,
I'm not good at anything. So I get loads of people.
And then people look at it, mate, and they scrutinise you. And I've seen it. I'm going to admit, I've seen comments saying, "Oh, you've done recent podcasts before," and people go, "Oh, it's all about him. It was this person who actually helped get the club here." Well, yeah, because from a bigger picture, i.e., the CEOs, I had to look at where we're strong, where we're weak, or what could be improved. I'll bring that person to do that role in order to do the big picture plan, which is what? Get this club to the next level or whatever we're trying to achieve. And I think, I love that you've said that, because I think people watching this should take note and listen very carefully, is don't just make an opinion based on one outcome. Understand behind the scenes, like my business, people look at it and they go, "Oh, Paul's doing this and he's doing that." My fucking team are doing it. While I'm speaking to you right now, I've got people where I were biting on my gum shield back 2-3 years ago, doing the work, working silly hours. They're better than me. And then they go, "But it's them who's..." Of course. Because
I'm a huge Formula One fan outside of this. And I listened to what James Vowles said, the principal of Williams. And he's turning Williams round. And I think it's fantastic the way he's doing it properly, doing it with people at the heart. A lot to learn. You can learn a lot from that. And he said that in a Formula One team, I can't remember exactly the exact quote, but something like you need 10,000 components all working well. And if some of them slip, you need to make sure the other 9,999 are all. It's never one thing.
No.
And he's absolutely spot on. And I think when I think about that, and that's how it feels. You know, it just feels like David said to me, where was it? I can't remember. Some point during the season, he said, "If we can get it right on the pitch, we join up all the dots. If we can just get over the line." And we had so many moments, you know, Carlisle, Birmingham, Wickham, they just felt really cruel. Even beating Newport 4-1 to finish ninth, we didn't probably deserve it, but it felt cruel. We've not done, I don't think it's been too bad on the pitch, but it's never, because we don't have that validation, it's very hard to justify doing well. And I accept that. You know, you need to win. It doesn't count if not, really. And I think that's that feeling of joining up the dots, but you've just got to have everything pushing, you know. And people who've been involved at Bradford before have talked to me about it. It's something different. It's got to be something different at Bradford. It's a certain feeling, and it's trying to work out what that feeling is. And it evolves in time. You can't repeat the past. It changes. But, you know, I spoke to people like Phil Parkinson when I took over. I spoke to Stephen Darby. I spoke to Gary Jones. I spoke to the people that made their heart beat at that time.
Yeah, nice.
And try and pull bit. You can't copy it. Mm. These are geniuses, you know. Mm. You can only aspire. But if you can try and take little bits from everywhere and put it together, but without a doubt, you are an average of the five people around you. And in my opinion, it's about the 20. I've got 20 or more maybe now top people. Mm. But you remember, we're running a massive company. Mm. You know, we're running a £12 million business next season, in my opinion. And these people, we don't have the staff that every other clubs have. But that just gives us this difference. We're different to other clubs because...
Other clubs look at us, you see. That's why we're different. We don't look at...
We're different because we just... We don't have this massive funding from the top.
Yep.
What we take, what our owner is able to give us, we are massively grateful for. So we have to build this business beneath it so it's viable to start with. And that just puts us in front for me. We might not win every game next season, but we're in front because our football club has got a pulse and it's beating away. Mm. And the people behind the scenes and then the supporters and the partners or the sponsors all on the same page, you are a monster. You know, and that's what I said back in the day. And a lot of the things we discussed in the initial meetings last summer, the summer before, when we're talking as a whole group of staff, is about the oil tanker that Bradford City is. And when it's going the wrong direction, it's really sad to see. Mm. But unfortunately, and my biggest learning is patience, I'm very impatient, is it took a lot longer than I wanted it to just turn the ship round.
Yeah.
And now we're starting, I think, to gather some pace. Hopefully, touch wood, if we do our jobs correctly, continue to do our jobs as best we can, it'll take some time to slow the oil tanker down. Mm. Whereas if you're a speedboat, you can get stopped quite quickly. Mm. Internally, I see us as a bit of a speedboat, but externally, we are a bigger tanker and we're carrying the hopes and dreams of a lot of people.
Absolutely.
And we get that. That's the weight.
Let's take it to the actual final game of the season now. Let's talk fan to fan, right? Personally, I want to know it's in your head. So, Sasu run it recently on the pod.
Mm.
He said you might have seen it. So, let's instead of the goal, let's talk about the 94th minute. When Sar skies it, right? So I sit in like 1911, me and my old man, and I believed we were going to score. I thought, it's going to come. Mm-hmm. It's definitely coming. It's funny, at the end of season dinner, Laps were on the table with us, George Laps there. And I said to Laps, I guarantee you this weekend you'll either score or you'll be involved in the goal. And obviously we'll get to that in a minute, right?
She told me that before.
Yeah. Can you imagine if I'd known it? But that 94th minute comes to Sars, bang over the bar. Me personally, it's done. Like, I can't believe this again. I can't go through, you know, playoffs. It just never happens for us. And all these questions come back, as we know, from years gone.
Yep.
What are you thinking?
Lots of things. I think Stephen Gent, our head of recruitment, he always says to me, if we're ever watching a game together, they'll get another chance if we're watching another game, or we'll get another chance. So I can't, you know, that one, you stick that in your mind and you go, we'll get another chance. So when Jack hits the post, and then I think it actually was handball when I watched it back.
It's like a save
by the defender, but we move on. And then I thought, one more, we get one more. There's still 2 minutes to go. And there's maybe a bit more and something in the air. And when he blasted it over the bar, it's funny because Julian Rhodes sits in front of me and his dad always sits at the side of me.
Yeah.
Always.
And he was there?
He was there.
Okay.
And he's what we'd scored.
Okay.
He actually genuinely couldn't believe it. He said, "Why? What's going on?" I said, "He's off the bar." He went, "Off it." He couldn't. We just expected it to hit the net.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Anthony did as well. But then I'm telling you now, he would have definitely swapped Sky in that for what came moments later. So, yeah, you are thinking a lot of things, not dissimilar thoughts. We're all human. We're all supporters of the club in that moment. And we are, I've got lots of things going through my mind, like, okay, we'd had a discussion the day before the game with Graham, and I'd had a chat with Graham and Chris about how they'd earned the moment. This was their time. Don't fear it. You know, just a general conversation about let's not be scared of tomorrow's outcome. What happened? What will happen? Will happen. You know, fate will decide ultimately if we've done everything we can. And I didn't want that. I didn't want to have another conversation, which would have been. We can do it in the playoffs, and so you're starting to think about okay, well, that conversation that I didn't want to have, I'm probably going to have it now about how we're going to get ourselves up for the playoffs, and we're not going to, we can't see this as a failure. We have to see it as just a speed bump, a few of them. So you don't want any more of them. And then I was thinking about the staff. You know, I'm thinking these people have given everything, and they're going to have to come back to the well on a Teams call Sunday morning, which we'd already penciled, because you've got to pencil to prepare for a playoff leg, away from home first and at home second. And I just didn't want them people to have to deal with that. I didn't want to. I couldn't imagine them having to do that. Yeah. Even though, you know, I don't want to. There's a lot of teams will be very happy to be in the playoffs. So let's not.
Yeah.
Talk that down. It's not easy to do. Bradford City have proven that over the last 122 years or whatever. It's not. We're not exactly silverware city.
Yeah.
But in our world at that moment, it was unthinkable. So, yeah, all them thoughts are racing through your mind. My wife looked at me as if to say, I said to the boys, David and Stephen, I said, maybe just not meant to be today, lads. I can't believe we've got to 0-0 on 95.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what happens.
The moment.
You know,
And when that moment happened,
When that moment happened, I was just. I remember someone grabbing my head from somewhere and just shaking it. And then I looked at the pitch, and Julian Rhodes said to me, not there and then, he said I was just sheet white. And he said, you looked completely shocked. I said, I don't even remember. And I think that's what it was. Because in your mind, when you start to come to terms with something like losing, not losing, but drawing to lose, you have to have acceptance. You've got to lead. You can't dwell on these moments, even though they are tough to take. I would have really struggled with it, obviously. But you've got to then go back to lead people and help people, because they need that. Everyone needs that at that point. And to then have that ripped away and go, don't worry about all that, party time, is something that I'd never experienced in my life.
No,
I have actually seen it the other way.
Yeah,
you know, I vividly remember, and I can see it happening in front of my eyes now. £1 million game just down the road from here, Bellevue, Wakefield, Bradford, completely convinced we're going back into Super League, and in the last minute they score a try, and the whole world slowed down for me, and I was like, oh my god, it's over. Oh no. So we'd gone from, we're going to win, to we've lost in a second. Back then, 10, 15 years ago, whatever it was, 2014. So exactly almost 10 years to this moment, which was the complete reverse of that. And yeah, it was magic. Unreal. There's no other words for that, because you can't, you know, if I'd have known at Swindon when the fifth goal went in, and I'd have known at Doncaster when we missed the penalty, and if I'd have known at Chesterfield when we bombed a 3-1 lead that it was all coming for this reason, I would have been absolutely fine about it.
Yeah.
But at the time, it did feel a bit tough towards the end of the season. We were just having that moment as a football club where I don't think anyone spoke about it, but it's conscious. There's a consciousness of winning is not easy. And the football club had forgotten how to win and learnt how to lose badly for many years prior, and we'd started to work it out a bit in the last couple of seasons. But to actually put it in the history books as job done, the club needed to learn how to do that again. So culturally, that was the bit in our organisation that we just needed to understand how it felt and how to do it. And when that's happening and it's close, people start to change in how they feel. Not changes people, they just... Their mindset changes, and people get nervous or don't get nervous or try to cover that. And we're all human. And there was a bit of that when we were coming towards the finishing line of the season, where when we went top, I think, with about a month to go, where we thought,
this is it.
We were determined we're going to win the league title. But then there's a lot of people in the business, me included, never seen that before. In fact, not many people who've ever watched Bradford City have seen it. Only once in the last 40 years. So it was interesting, and you learn a lot about how people cope, myself included, in those situations, but you grow from that.
And do you know what? What grow an effort layer. To get promoted, because when you think of it, and me and Sars were saying it, when we had on paper as fans our best players, Sars, Bobby, Pato, and then all got injured at times. Then we're swapping and changing. Cavett said, because obviously Cookie were out from Christmas time or just in January.
Well, a lot's made of that, isn't it? Yep. With Walsall and Nathan Lowe, but we lost Andy Cook
before
exactly. Nathan Lowe.
So then you look, then you look at that and you think, when you look at that big picture of the season, and then towards the back in the games, Smallwood then gets sent off and we're 2-0 up, and then Baldwin gets sent off and the dunk, and you're just like, and to get over the line, there've been so many. Like in that final stretch,
but that kind of makes the story, doesn't it?
Exactly,
if I'm honest.
And that's what I'm saying. And did you know this?
Sorry,
did you know that Sarr said, which is interesting, 56, 40th anniversary,
96.
It's just
well, I mean,
I know obviously it's all.
To be quite honest with you, I believe in fate. So if you don't believe in it, there's a lot of coincidences that have occurred in the last. In the last few years, to be honest, there's things that have happened that are uncanny, and it can't. It just felt. I said to the manager at the start of the season, "This will be the season," and here are all the reasons, and we keep them between me and him. And 95% of them play out. You know everything. Just and even what things have happened elsewhere. Just keep an eye on everything. Things start to level in life. You know, things go full circle. And like I said, if you do good, eventually you get rewarded for that. And I think it just made it all part of the story. To be honest, I think it was all about. In fact, you know, when people say there's no straight line success and they're cliches, but and one of the things that Ken Davey was saying at Huddersfield the other night was about how it doesn't look like that. It's this. It's this, it's this.
Yep.
And then you get there, but all that in the middle, people try and forget about it. So actually, I think this season was almost that. It was just roller coaster, bumps in the road. You know, we had a period, like you say, where all our players were injured. And and then what people don't respect, and I do, because I see the lads every day, is every couple of times a week, them boys who were then the only fit players left, the 15, 16 players, are having to play week in, week out and perform at a level to get results, which is why you have inconsistency, because those players by default want their teammates in there to help them. That's the idea. So the squad was really tested, the manager was obviously tested, and he held his nerve and cracked on, and it's really tough, you know, managing Bradford City. One of the toughest jobs in the English football, I would say. Particularly when you're in League Two, because there's such a weight of expectation to get out. Probably a lot like Jack Ross felt at Sunderland in League One and people who came after him and before him. Really tough. Really tough. Because it's not Graham's fault, and it isn't mine, if I'm honest, that we were in League Two to start with. But you have to get out. You have to be the people to do it, to get out of it. And all the people at the club now have achieved that, and then you set that benchmark of we don't want to go back there, and you work really hard to make sure about that.
And look, from me and many fans, I'm sure, and Dino, if we were here, to say the same thing, is well done to you and all the backroom staff, you know, like we mentioned there, from Graham, the front end, the players, you, the team. I think you've just mentioned building up to this moment where it's finally. It's the iceberg effect. They don't see underneath the water.
Yeah,
see the
probably.
Tip, and all that's now come to fruition. So let's go to next season then. What would realistic success look like to you next season then for Bradford?
Well, I think it's, to be honest with you, it's we won't be going into League One any different to how we went into League Two.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean we're going to try and win. Obviously, you don't win every game. So whatever that looks like. But we won't be going into games accepting defeat. Oh, we're happy to lose this one. Because then that's changing, culturally changes the whole organisation. We're not built like that. So it is a case of, this is how much money we can afford to spend. This is how good our staff are at getting the best out of that money. We let everyone do their jobs. So we trust them to find us the best players and train them in the right way and coach them in the right way and manage them in the right way. And I believe we'll give a really good account of ourselves, and we want to be competitive. You know, we haven't got a budget that's the bottom of the league. We certainly haven't got one that's the top of the league either, because they're in a League One is an alarming financial landscape.
Is there a big difference from League Two going straight to League One?
The big difference is if you're at the bottom of League Two, you might have a budget of between 1.5 and 2 million. Let's be really wide, so no one is offended by that. 1 to 2 million. Some clubs get themselves in hotter water with far bigger budgets. Yeah. Frankly, Bradford City found that out in 2019 with 4 million plus in League One, which then would have been a top seven budget. Mm. So the gap between the bottom to the top of League Two, you can make a difference with £1 million, £1.5 million. You can go from there to there. Mm. In League One, I think that's more like 2.5 to 4 million, up to maybe 10 to 20 million.
Wow.
So if you want to do what Birmingham have done, you'd need to spend 8 or 9 times what we spent in League Two last year.
Yeah.
So the gap to success is bigger, but that doesn't mean you can't compete, because it's not an exact science. Mm. And when you look at the budgets of the League One teams last year, roughly, and where they all finish, it's not exact. The top one or two is, and the bottom one or two are. Mm. And then there's a bit of a mixture. And some clubs have outperformed the budget, and we'll be looking to outperform it as best we can. But equally, I don't know. I just see, for me, you're probably saying I don't answer the question. I haven't, because we're going to judge that when we know what the landscape looks like. But we'll be, if we can get to the end of the season and collectively, as a supporter base and as a leadership of a club and everybody together, and we believe we've done the very best we can do, I think we'll know. Mm. I think we'll all know that because we'll see the opposition and we'll see where we sit. Mm. But we're building a good squad. We've got some great players have arrived. We've got more to come. And I think everyone's just looking forward to it. Yeah. We've got nothing to fear. Yeah. We're not going into games worrying about not getting where we want to get to. Yeah. We're going into games now, believe it, wondering where we might be able to get to.
And I think
that's
fans,
a very different feeling.
I think you've built excitement around it. I think as fans commercially and on the pitch, I think it's built excitement around it as a fan's perspective. And believe it, like I said to Sars, I don't think we're going to go in there and we're going to look at it and think we could survive or let's get... I believe we could do a back-to-back, and that's a belief from a fan point. I genuinely do. From a fan point, like you said, some good signs and stuff. The Smallwood signing was tough, wasn't it? For a fan perspective, in seeing Smallwood leave the club. With those kind of decisions, Ryan, and obviously zooming out, is that decisions from everyone, like a player? And obviously, like it's because that's a tough isn't it? Because that would have shocked to me.
Yeah, Richie, you know, first of all, with a few really good people have left the club. Then we've had a really
good
a good group of people who finished this season with us. And, you know, there's Jamie's had a long time with us, Richie, Callum's gone. There's a few players that have moved on. Mm. And we all had really good bond. You know what I mean? So it's really sad when that happens. That is the game. I've been there. It's tough to see. And, you know, you mentioned Richie, so I'm happy to speak about Richie. No problem. As a captain, I had a very good relationship with him, CEO to captain. I think you can learn a lot from someone like Richie. I think the way he handles the pressure of being captain of Bradford, and we all know there's been some super, super popular captains right throughout my childhood to the present day. So to get yourself in line as a promoted captain of Bradford, there won't be many people who can say they did that.
Dino's definitely not one of them.
But, you know, he's been a fantastic player, great servant. Mm. Ultimately, it's the manager's decision who he was in the squad. Conversations were had, without a doubt. They always are. It's a very big decision, that. But it's a decision that we allow our manager to have the final say on. Mm. You've got to allow that, in my view, because it's his players. And I know him and Richie spoke, and Richie moves on with our best wishes. But from my perspective, I've enjoyed working with pretty much every player we've ever had. Mm. You know, they're some good people. They care. You know, what I found really nice was the amount of text messages from players that we have let go, or players that have moved on to different clubs in the past, all flooding in on the last day of the season. Mm. Congrats, 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 because you build a bond. And players from other clubs that have worked with some of the staff, like David and Stephen, nice to see. But yeah, it was a huge decision. And every decision is, by the way, every player you allow to leave. You know, I mean, look at when Andy Cook joined us. Mm. I remember the reception Andy Cook got. He scored 85 goals. He'll probably get 100 at least for the club. He was written off from the start. every players are let go by certain clubs. It doesn't always work out. It works at different clubs. Mm. I think Richie's been a fantastic leader. I've always said we've had a good relationship. We had a laugh with each other. He's been good for his teammates. He's always tried to do the right thing for them. And ultimately, he did what not many people have done before. So I have a lot of respect for him. I think he has had some tough spots, tough times at the club as well, where he's been criticised unfairly. One of those moments for this season, I was very disappointed by it, where penalty he was booed, taking a penalty.
Yeah,
I thought it was very poor.
And
a week later, we were the opposite of that to a former player, so I didn't understand that. But Richie's to come to do that when you are criticised, that is really impressive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as a human being, you can learn a lot. And I actually think there's a lot to take from that. And I spoke to Richie a couple of days after, the day after it was announced. I let him obviously have some time when he announced that he was moving on himself, which we allowed him to roll with that. And we had a good chat, and I just said, you know, pick up the foot. It's nice when you can leave with a good bond, I think, and have respect for each other. And I wish him very well. And equally, of course, I wish Jamie well as well. You know, Jamie's a player that came in a tougher patch, did really well, fan favourite. I think he's the only player in my time where I've seen thousands of people chant sign him up. So we did as we were told.
A great player. I saw him on Friday, Jamie.
Yeah.
56.
Great servant for the club, and Callum and the other boys that have moved on. Every single player has played their part, and they've been good people.
Absolutely,
they've been good people, and that's why they've been successful.
So when we look at someone like Bobby, he's been a bright spark from the academy. How important is it then to invest and put our time and efforts into like the youth development now at Bradford City, knowing what Bobby's done?
Yeah, it's important. You have to get the balance right on that. You have to be honest about where we are. I think Bobby gets a lot of credit. I don't think he gets enough, which might surprise you. Mm. I don't think, you know, you talk about what's it like behind the scenes. To make your way out of a Cat 3 academy in an under-19 side that plays in a regional division into a first team in the EFL and start games and score massive goals and be involved in huge moments, for me, the turning point in our season this season was Bromley away. He scored the goal.
And just for our viewers, before you go into it, what's Cat 3? Explain that for the academy.
So there's different categories that are funded in different ways and cost different amounts to run, and it's all down to facilities and what you can put on the table. Category 3 is one below the lowest, one above the lowest. And so our focus has always been on producing, and this is why it's such an achievement what Bobby's done. Our focus is on producing players, frankly, for Premier League football. We block their path by keeping them in our system too long if we're not careful, because we don't have the 23s facility for them to grow and develop. So we then try to get players out on loan. That can be mixed. Certain players have loans that are better than others and don't kick on and do kick on. So if we have a player that we believe's ultra talented and has got interest from higher, we don't tend to block their path. If the club in the Premier League is fair with us and doesn't try to manipulate a deal to suit them, which they don't, they tend to be very good, we let the players move on. Man United, Wolves, Brighton, to name a few clubs that we've done deals with in the last few seasons, Crystal Palace. And these are clubs who can, those players can then grow wings and do things that they can't do with us, which you might not want to hear, but it's the truth. And for us to then invest in a 23 system, that money would have to come out of our first team budget. It would impact us on the pitch as we stand. So we make a decision to carry on with the way we structure it. So for Bobby to get through that system, never give in, and I think he was involved in boxing as well, and he sort of put that down. So he made a decision. He picked football. And before Neil Matthews passed away, very, very tragically, he said to me, he said, Bobby Poynton will play for Bradford's first team. Trust me, he's going to score. And I said, well, if you say it, I'll believe it. And he burst onto the scene. Mark Hughes gave him his chance. Graham gave him his second coming, if you like. And to hold down a spot, it ain't easy. And to play in them games, I just think he deserves. And I'm not trying to patronise him in any way, by the way. I just think people, the bridge he has had to get over, he's massive, and a lot of players try to, and they can't. And we've let some talented players go who are 19, who can't. We haven't got a place for them. But no, he's done super, super well. However, you do have to have a clear strategy at academy level as to what you're doing, because it changes things. Mm. As things stand, that's the way we go.
Yeah.
If we climb the pyramid, that may change, because we may feel we need a second squad behind us. When I came to the club, they had a 23 squad. They disbanded it. And there was then 40-odd players in the first-team squad, because they're all under contract.
Mm-hmm.
And it got a bit lost and a bit messy. And it probably damaged a lot of those guys' careers. Mm-hmm. You know, the younger boys, mm-hmm. it wasn't fair. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of that as well. Mm-hmm.
No, I think all respects, I think, to Bobby, like you said, is if for him to come through and perform at that level as well, it's yeah, just
the insane. Hometown club, it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and look, fingers crossed that we can obviously get some more through it. When we talk about landscape of the club then, and this is a conversation that I hear so many fans, I don't know too much about it, and I'm sure you can touch on it as much as you can. When it comes to our stadium, we don't own that currently, do we? Is no. that still a conversation that we've been looking at to actually purchase the stadium in time?
Yeah, I mean, it's a conversation that has
been... It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because you talk about budget, and sorry to interrupt you, Ryan.
No, that's fine.
Is... I'm looking at, because obviously, as I told you, I'm business mentor to 50 plus clients. My focus would be, right, where, and again, football can be completely different, but if I look at my biggest client doing a big turnover, like I said, 9 million plus, the infrastructure for him is, right, where's your biggest asset that's driving the most revenue, and where can we then distribute that to continue to scale? From a business perspective, for me at Bradford City, it's what you've said. I think it's looking operationally in the team, the players, getting the results, and if that revenue comes, you can spend it in there to lease. And I know that might sound crazy at some fans, but... Is there still onus to purchase the stadium then?
The biggest... Well, you've got to take that conversation back to where we were, really. So, Gordon Gibbons... Well, Gordon Gibbons, his family own Flamengo Land. They own the stadium for the pension trust. That's been the case since I was 10 years old. I've never seen that as an actual issue, if I'm honest. I think it's an excuse. You've got to put the numbers down on the table and say, so it costs us £500,000 a year to rent it. So some people say it's expensive, some people would say not. It's also £500,000 regardless of what league we're in. So we could be in the Premier League and £500,000 would be lunch for us. So in League 2 it's warmer, in League 1 it's less warm, in the Championship it's sort of in the middle, and in the Premier League it would be like another bill. £500,000 would be the wage of maybe one top player at the very top of that division in a fortnight, something like that. Yeah. So we had no relationship with Gordon at all when I started. I thought that was really important. He now sponsors the club, great relationship, very helpful, does things that he doesn't need to do. I think that's a really good place to be. Opens the door for the conversation around the stadium. The owner, it's an expensive piece of kit as a ground, so you would have to ask yourself, if you wanted to build a stadium with 24,800 seats, now, what would it cost you? Probably a lot more than £500,000 a year.
Yeah.
that stadium is our cash machine. It's where we create our revenue. Mm-hmm. So we set very ambitious targets for our departments. We try to make them most of the time. We're doing it again internally now, and people frown at me and go, you're a pain in the backside. But that's how we do it. And I think without the stadium, we don't have any of that. Mm. So rather than worrying about what it doesn't do, owning the stadium would only mean one thing. We have an asset that makes the club more valuable. We could potentially borrow against it. We could potentially do things to it more easily. But we can do a lot of it anyway. You know, if I said to Gordon and his team, would you be open to us building a new shop? I'm pretty sure the answer would be yes.
Yeah.
So, because we'd be enhancing the facility that we're renting, so it would make it more sense. It's regardless of whether we own it or rent it, we have to maintain it. So that doesn't change anything. So it's not like if we suddenly buy it, someone's going to come in and start rebuilding it. Mm. That's not the case. So it's not ideal, but it doesn't affect, how do I put this? It doesn't affect my day-to-day view of the club.
Mm.
It's just £500,000 on the bottom line.
Mm.
But if Stefan Rupp was to buy it, the only way that would benefit the club is if he didn't want the rent for it, which he probably wouldn't. So, okay, you take £500,000 off the bottom line. Mm. That's the plus.
Mm.
But that's short term as well. So, I don't know. I don't think it should be seen as like the handbrake thing.
This is why I asked you that, Ryan, because I totally agree. I think I couldn't agree more with you. I think it's a question that everyone always asks, but I think hopefully for Bradford fans listening to that and what you said, you've been honest in your answer there, is I don't think it commercially makes the huge difference to the club in where we're heading.
It is a number.
Yeah.
It's an amount of money that, rather than being paid out, it will be in the bank.
Mm.
But then you balance that with, okay, well, if we didn't have Valley Parade, we had a smaller stadium with no commercial areas and we couldn't brand it, or we didn't have a perimeter that we could have fan zones in and things like that, but we owned it, would that be better? No.
Mm.
No. And the other problem we have, and we've entered multiple conversations with councils about, I'm going to be as diplomatic as I can be, pipe dreams about new stadiums in Bradford without any actual funding. And the question I've always asked is, well, okay, we build a new stadium, we share the ground with the Bulls, that's not a massive issue, but how do we carve up the commercials? Because our business is next season, 11 to 12 million. I don't know what the Bulls is, and quite by the way, we have great relationships with Bradford Bulls. They're doing really well, and the guys who are running it, I'm delighted, have restored what I believe is an institution in Bradford and are running it properly. And so we've had good conversations, and the people around the table that need to be. But if our commercial revenue next season is 2 million quid, do we keep all that? Can we keep all that? At the moment, we keep all of it. It's all ours. It's in our stadium. So these are very, very complicated conversations.
Mm.
And we would have to have a deal. If we were to ever be built a new stadium, even if the rent was £50,000, if we lost £1 million in commercial revenue and kiosks and catering, we're worse off.
Absolutely.
And there are a number of clubs in the EFL, without naming them, that it's pretty obvious, who've openly said that it's cost them, they've lost revenue and have become far less viable since they left their old stadiums. So it's not about leaving the stadium. I personally don't see it as a big subject. It's not something... It's something to talk about because it's a thing.
Mm.
It's a part of the fabric of Bradford City, but it has been for like almost as long as I've been alive.
Mm.
So did it stop us getting promoted this season? No. Did it make us almost get relegated in 2021? No. Did it influence us getting relegated back to League Two? Absolutely not. Did it stop us getting to the Premier League? No. So...
I totally agree, because I think...
If you're not careful, you start to put in excuses into your story. You've got to be careful not to make, oh, well, that's why we failed. It's not why we failed.
No.
It's not. It's just a factor. And there's many clubs, I imagine, who would be okay with having a stadium that's got 24,800 seats and only paying $500,000. Mm. Some clubs higher up than us. So, yeah, it's... I'm very comfortable with it, as you can probably tell.
And look, I think, like you said, you have to look at every business as what's the key driver that's really going to get us to the end goal.
Mm.
And the stadium, like I said, one of my clients is doing big turnover. He had a question with me, Paul, should I buy the building now and have it as an asset? And I'm like, well, no, because look what we've done in scalability from where you are to where you're heading. You lease that out, you pay rent on that. We've now just built your brand where actually you're renting out another space that you don't own. But look at your balance sheet now, look at your bottom line, look at the turnover we're doing, look at your prop, like... We don't need to be purchasing X, Y, and Z in order to, you know, facilitate that money we could save. You could actually spend that said money in this to get you to the big picture plan that we've set for the last 5 years. So I totally agree. Look, we'll start to wrap this up, but before we go into quick fire questions, how would you like to be remembered?
Why am I? Was something good?
Yeah, bring him out. In all seriousness, not even just at Bradford City. I think, like, when the time does come, when you put your hat down, and, you know, you're playing paddle with me, mate. Shanking golf balls. Seriously, how would you like to be remembered?
Just as someone who was decent with people and tried the best to make things better. Mm. Simple as that. How you are viewed will only be truly measured when you've gone, unfortunately. Mm. Mm. Derek Adams once said to me, players are often better remembered when they're injured or dead. And I thought, well, quite... He's right. He's probably right. Mm. So I'm not a player, but you can see the point. I don't worry too much about that. Don't sit and think about things like that. It will be what it will be on that. I will do my best. And if people thought I was good for the club and I tried and I was genuine, that'll do.
Mm. Do you know what, mate? I've said it downstairs. I'm saying it here, and I wish Dino were here. We'll have to do a part two one time. When we're at Prem in 2 years' time. It'd be good, because Dino's going to come make it today. But, like, on behalf of me, I'm sure Dino'd say it. I'm glad you've come, Ryan, because I've even from not knowing you until really today, I used to say to my old man, when you're getting shit, because I get shit too, in my, not to the level that you get, I said to my old man, I said, you know what? I said, politely, those people saying it, like, you need to have a word with yourself, because in that position where you currently are, and what we just discussed here today, and what you're trying to achieve, is evident now in what we have, and it's a team effort, and it's having to, like I said, it's the iceberg effect. They see the promotion, but they don't see under the water day to day of the hard, grueling factor. Like you touched on it, businesses like this, right? And then eventually, and people just want it to go. People just want it to do this, right? And
Well, me too.
I think you've shown here dedication. I think passion. I think hopefully people see a different side to you in who Ryan is. Forget Ryan Sparks. Who Ryan is, in that when you've got your mind set on something, it seems like you want to win. And I think you are an absolute fucking credit to the club. And long may that continue, mate, going to the future, buddy.
I appreciate
it. Honestly, mate. So look, quick fire questions. Dean will be good because he always asks this question. It's his question he likes to ask. A little lighthearted. So, I'm a celebrity. You've seen it, Ryan.
Oh, God.
You've seen it. If you're an I'm a celebrity and you get to the final
I'd be gone after the first trial, mate. I'd be like, no, thanks.
The final four or three, and they get you to choose your meal. You can choose your starter, your main, your dessert, and what you swill it down with. Starting off, Ryan, what would be anything? What would be your starter?
Oh, God.
This will show who you are.
I don't know. Oh, God, I haven't thought about it. I've not even, you've caught me off guard. Starter. Some kind of prawns or salmon or something like that is what I would if...
Your main, what's your main?
Curry.
Curry, what kind
we'd
of
have
curry?
A curry? We'd have I'm going to get some stick for this in Bradford, maybe a butter chicken or masala, something in the middle.
What'd be your dessert, mate?
Dessert, sticky toffee pudding would be the
dessert. Yes, good man. Ice cream or cream?
Cream, probably.
Oh, you've let me down, mate.
It's but to be fair, it's too hot for a sticky toffee pudding out there anyway. Yeah, would cheesecake.
And then what would you swill it down with? What's your go-to drink?
Depends where I'm at. Depends what happens on a Saturday. if it's going all right, red wine. If we're having a tricky one, whiskey.
Good man. Same as me, I'm a whiskey man. Your go-to karaoke song?
I've had a few. I think... probably some UB40 track, or I've done some bad stuff.
Like, go on then, give us a bit.
No, not a chance.
Red Wine.
Yeah.
Going to your Netflix account, iPlayer, any of those docuseries, what would we find? What are you currently watching?
I'm a documentary nerd, so I will watch everything, all the new documentaries that come out, whether it's about world affairs, where something's happened, or like Lockerbie recently, very interesting. But then more, I'm into. I love the sports documentaries. I love watching the All or Nothing things and F1 Drive to Survive, because nice. I get to. It's almost like you get to see behind the scenes and where those guys, the levels they work at, and the excellence they produce. You think, wow, you know. I mean, when I saw Dallas Cow, I think it's Dallas, with the training ground stadiums bigger than any stadium in like English football in the lower leagues in English football. But the way they do it, and what you do pick up things. I remember Arizona, the Cardinals, they do like a debrief after games on the Monday, but they get everyone together, like staff and performance staff and GM and president or whatever the roles are over there. But that'll teach you a lot. You can pick things up all the time. Yeah. So I think my wife will just we'll watch another documentary. She'll just go watch something else. But
I'll tell you what, talking to Speedway, mate, my mate had a stag do. He's a big
Mighty
Speedway.
Dukes.
He's a big Speedway fan, you see. Mm-hmm. His uncle's Gary Everlock.
Oh, he's my hero.
Is it Gary Everlock? Mm. So shout out to Sean Lana, Brian Lana. Yeah. And then you met an old Lana, I think, he was the trainer, yeah. So a good friend of mine, Sean Lana, went in his stag do. And we went to Poland, and the Speedway we went to go watch, mate, it was insane.
Yeah.
It was packed. Yep. I thought we were going to go to some dirt track, a bit like Oddsill, mate, it was rammed.
To be fair, we could do a Speedway podcast. now we'd enjoy that. The track at Oddsill is what a lot of the Polish tracks are based on.
Oh, okay.
Because it was deemed a great track.
Right.
Joe Screen, ex-Bradford Dukes man, lap record holder, still I can see it now. That was my initial. My granddad took me to Bradford Dukes when I was 3 or 4 years old, and I'm in. You know, it will surprise a lot of people. That is my number one sport. Right. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm going on Friday at the British Grand Prix before I go on holiday. And, you know, you'll see me now and again at Sheffield Tigers and Bellevue because we don't have the Dukes anymore. But my actual life dream would be to have the money to rebuild Bradford Speedway as a just even if I was the only person there watching it, I'd be all right with that. Yeah. I'd just take the dog. but no, the I do. Yeah, I love that sport, and that is my sport.
Nice bit. You're similar age to me. I'm 35, going 36 this year now. Your favourite TV show as a kid growing up?
My word. I'm trying to think. I can't remember. It would have been. What are we talking? How old?
Dexter's Laboratory. Oh, mate. Yeah, we're talking all these stuff. Things.
Yeah,
you know?
Dexter's Laboratory. My brother had the remote. I just used to do as I was told. Yeah. He'd be the one. Cartoon Network was a thing in our house. So, yeah. But I remember them days. Yeah, he was the boss of the TV.
If people get embarrassed about it, I'm like, sit to our last. I went, it doesn't matter how many business owners I have to scale the business. I'm human. Put fucking cat dog on. Dexter's Laboratory. Powerpuff Girls, I'm on it. Look, to date, who do you like watching play in the current squad? Who did you like last season? Just come by. I mean, they're all great, obviously, but who would you say stood out for you last season?
I mean, I thought... Oh, that's a hard question.
There's many, but like for me, if I had to give you my opinion, mine would
be. Give me yours.
I say Bobby because of the fact what you said. I think to step up that young age, to turn up week in week out consistently to do things that he did, that he was a standout for
it's
me.
It's really tough. I think so many players did so well.
You could say Smallwood because in that middle park, he did touch. But just
great,
one, give me one name.
Season.
It's all of them, but just one.
I'm probably. That's a really, honestly, it's a tough question.
You can't sit on the fence, Ryan.
You've got to remember, we had a lot of different teams out there because of the injuries and everything.
We did, but you're not favourite.
Do you know what? I think Richie had a great season. Yeah. Sars had a great season. Loads of boys did well. Cookie contributed in the first half. Cav had to carry a lot of weight on his back, but people don't give him any credit for.
Yeah, said that on Sars.
The defenders were rock solid defensively. But I think, I think for Alex Patterson to come... from the injuries that he's, when he joined us, he never had an injury.
No.
You know, he joined us like a long time. He actually joined, Pato's been with us since the previous summer.
Yeah.
And the poor guy was struck down by the hamstring injury and then he came back and got another one. So for him to be scoring and feeling like himself again, and I know mentally the challenges he'll have been through, I was really happy for him and he did really well. He started the season for us with a bang. When people thought, we're going to get beat by MK Dons, they've spent lots of money, blah, blah, blah. We whacked them in 15 minutes. It was magical. It actually kind of ended how it started, if you like. So I can't answer that question because I...
But you did, so pat off.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. There's some great guys in the squad who've done wonderful and... Yeah, you want to keep that squad together best you can.
Right, that's it, mate. Final question we ask for you to wrap this one. We ask all our listeners, our viewers. Again, I want to say an absolute credit to the club, Ryan. You're an absolute credit to yourself, mate. Long may the success continue. I'm so glad you've come on today. You've showcased who you really are. So tell us, final message to those watching, to those listening, and how they can find their own inner greatness in any walk of life.
Well, first of all, you've got to see it. So you've got to decide what it's going to be and go, that's my aim. A lot of people will then probably go, well, that's never going to happen. That's the kind of what we do in our country. We write everything off and we're a little bit dour, I guess, at times. So that's the start point. Set the goal. Don't do anything wrong to anyone on the way to that, if you can. Be straight with people. And then and have the bravery... to do things that you think could weaken you, if that makes sense. Mm. So, that have got the potential to weaken you. I get loads of leaders around you, get people who are better than you around you, and let them show you how you get to that end goal as well. You can't do it on your own. If you think you can, you will be very lonely and very down and it'll be very tough. So... And that's the bit for me is when you realise that, I know it's a really bad clear, together you're stronger, all that kind of stuff. If you're divided, you fall. You can't have that. So for me, it's about setting your goal. And then when you do come across those speed bumps, it's easy saying this now, but at the time, I wish I could have said it. A lot of people said it to me, but you don't tend to take it on. It's a lot of people give advice, you don't always take it. You just got to keep going. You've just got to keep going. And it's such a simple thing to say. Just you won't get there if you exit or you run away from it. So you might as well see it through anyway. Do you know what I mean? So, and from my perspective, the story for me in this club hasn't stopped. This isn't like, and that's the end of the story, close the book. It's just like, that's that hurdle out of the way. Now what? And that's lots of rubbish come out of my mouth there, but that's what I would do.
My Sparks.
Cheers.
Thank you very much, mate. Brilliant. Fantastic, mate.
Thank you.